Welcome to DLC, your downloadable content for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsor this week, Squarespace.
Squarespace!
We love Squarespace. They make that possible. DLC, of course, is a show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. And also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Cannata, and I'm joined by my friend... slash co-host, slash nemesis, or as I like to call him, my Freakonem.
Freakonem!
The man whose life is meaningless now that Taker has lost at Mania, Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
That's a lot to process for an introduction. I think by, I don't know, maybe show 50, our whole show will just be you introducing me, and I'm really excited.
You don't even know what that means. Undertaker lost the streak, dude. No, it's WrestleMania. It's... crazy.
I know what it means. I'm on Twitter. I'm hip to the kids.
DLC, it means you're downloadable, Cannata. You're downloadable, Christian. But this week, DLC also means discussion with Lucas from Canada. Because on the show today, we've got, direct from the Great White North, one of gaming's most venerable voices, the creator and host of EP Daily, Reviews on the Run, whole bunch of shows. Actually, an entire network now, EPN, I think it's called, right? Mr. Victor Lucas.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jeff. Yeah, we launched EPN because we were making so much stuff and it was getting a little bit hard to kind of track down all the material that we're putting out there. And I picked up EPN.tv last year and I went, that kind of sums it all up right there. Let's call it that. And it's launched and response has been really good and we're just getting started.
It's awesome, man. I dig what you're doing. We used to work together.
Yes.
I'm a fan of your stuff forever. I'm a fan of all of the co-hosts that you've assembled. You have such an awesome team of awesome people. I urge people to go check out EPN.tv. It's awesome.
Well, thank you very much, man. And I miss you, and I think you're fantastic as well. And I'm really impressed with all of the many things that you juggle as well. You've always got something cool going on, and you're always impressive, dude. Christian, I don't know you, man.
he's not that
perfect,
to be honest. Mutual Admiration Society assemble. It's awesome. All right. So, well, this show is not about complimenting each other so much as it's about video games, tabletop games.
Games.
We always start the show the same way with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of great tags, man. These are awesome. I had no idea. I'm dancing in my office over here. This is great.
Yes, it's my mission to create earworms for people. Story of the Week is the segment where we try to convince one another what the most important story that happened in the world of gaming was. We got a lot of juicy stuff this week. And of course, listeners of the show can always submit stories. DLC is decided by listener contribution. So if you want to submit stories, you can do so using the hashtag DLCSOTW all week long. We got a lot of submissions this week. Vic, I'm very interested to hear what you think the most important story was this week.
I think it's probably the Amazon Fire. I think, I'm going over some of the email chain that's been going back and forth between us prepping for this, and I think you guys are kind of on it. I'm not sure if this was from you or from one of your listeners, but I think it's a really huge deal that Amazon is coming out with a product in this space. They've been sort of mixed messages about how important games are to them, but... their acquisition of Double Helix, the hiring Clint Hocking, who's a very well-established game developer. And I think Kelly Santiago also joined the Amazon team as well. They're making some big, big moves. And what differentiates these guys from, other players like Ouya or anybody else that tries this is that they have a huge customer base and they're going to be able to sell to players at every level.
Yeah, not a huge customer base, huge bank account that they can use to back up this. Like you said, purchasing Double Helix is a great start of using that money to make great games on their platform. This was submitted by a listener at Hyper Apathy, submitted this story among other people. And I do think it's a big deal. I mean, a lot of people are like, well, what's the difference between this and Ouya? And I think you nailed the difference, which is it's Amazon.
Yeah.
The device itself isn't particularly impressive. It's a $99 set-top box with 2 gigs of RAM and basically the same chip you'd find in a cell phone. But the games that they're showing on it look pretty cool. I mean, they're talking about bringing Minecraft and The Walking Dead and those other Telltale games to the device, as well as a bunch of original content that they showed a trailer for that looked like some cool looking stuff that looks like a cut above cell phone games. What do you think about this, Christian?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting the way that they're kind of trying to position the games. I feel like they're, you know, using a little bit of Apple's language, where Apple referred to their Apple TV as a hobby for years, and I guess now they're saying it's a little more than that. And Amazon is saying that what games are a bonus, I think, is the language they used.
Well, certainly buying the controller is a bonus. It costs you an extra $40.
Yeah, but I don't. It also, I think, works with most Android controllers. I don't have one of these devices. I did not order it, so I don't have one. So I don't know for sure. But I feel like games are a little more than a bonus, or whatever they're referring to it as Vic implied, where when you ramp up and you have your own Amazon Game Studios and you bring in some of the talent they brought in, someone over there at Amazon thinks games are a little more important than just, oh, and it plays games. But it'll be interesting to see, because the rumor is now that, you know, Google itself is going to release something more substantial than their current Chromecast dongle that will also be able to play games. So, you know, will that Amazon Games window portal be big enough, or will you be able to play any and all Android games? And so competition in this space is good. It's heating up, and I feel bad for the Ouya, because I think, this is a big blow to them.
Well, here's the other thing that's going to happen as well, is that they're introducing the $100 price point for plug into your TV consoles, and, you know, with a huge install base of titles to choose from right from the get-go. Now, you can argue, you know, the depth and the quality of these games all day long, but you have so many to choose from. And now Amazon, and I think Google, and I think Apple will all have $100 machines that they will be able to update, like they are updating their phones and their tablets, and they will all be interconnected, all in a fight for the television space. And I think, you know, eventually these things are going to have the horsepower to handle some really complex titles. Whether the development teams will be there to, you know, build stuff for these things, I think will be based on how many they sell. But I think the console market is changing, and this is a huge bellwether for that.
Yeah, I agree. I think the instinct for a lot of people, or at least the sentiment that I've been reading online from the hardcore gaming community, is to kind of write this off a little bit. And I think that we do that at our peril. I mean, I feel like it's the same thing when Amazon unveiled the Fire Kindle. You know, that version of a tablet seemed underpowered and marginalized by people who are like, well, why would you want this? And there's a very big demographic of people who want the entry level, inexpensive. They're not us. They're not the people who need to have the newest, latest, best. They don't have to have the most powerful console on the block, but they also don't want to pay $500, $600 for a console. So I think this can really open up.
Breaking news, as tweeted at me from Ozzy, you people listening might remember from Week in Confirmed, Android TV is announced. Google's TV. A week after,
yet another,
and so it's not only rumored, now it's a real thing, and yeah, that's crazy. It's all happening. It's like the Wild West of these things, right? Where it's insane. Great time to be an indie dev, which anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Jeff, but it's crazy.
No, not at all.
Madness.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, it is crazy if you are like us, who grew up with Nintendo, Sony, and you know, Sega and Microsoft. It's the Wild West, and people are going to run out of room in front of their televisions for all of the consoles that you'll be able to play.
Yeah,
and I am actually starting to wonder if we are. You know how there's a sort of uniform sort of standard for Blu-ray and DVD players out there. I'm wondering if the inverse of that will be players that will have multiple game store OSs attached to them. So you'll be able to get a machine that has Steam, Android, and maybe the PlayStation Store all built into it, so you can toggle between each of these different environments.
I call that a PC.
It's going to get nuts. Yeah, it's a PC.
It needs to be. You find it frustrating that, you know, my iPad or my iPhone can do Amazon Prime Instant Streaming and iTunes and Netflix, but yet when I get the official set-top box, the TV one.
Yes. Yeah.
Like the Apple TV doesn't have access to Amazon Prime, and the Amazon Fire TV doesn't have access to iTunes. I need my next TV, I think, needs to have 20 HDMI slots in the back.
Yeah, right. Yeah, totally, man. Absolutely. Maybe that's what Steve Jobs was hinting at. That's right. The next TV will be just limitless HDMI.
that would be a game changer right there. That's enough for me to buy a new television. It's like, yeah. The other thing that you bring up, this difference of sort of how we grew up interacting with video games, the other thing that occurs to me that's different now is I feel like when we were growing up and when you were a video gamer or you were into this hobby, you could play everything. You basically could, you know, basically some people had to choose, you know, Nintendo or Sega or, you know, Sony or Microsoft, and that was viable. But for the people who are really into it, you could pretty much play everything. And we're getting to the point now where that's just impossible. There's too much and there's too many different options, and it's becoming more like, you know, buying a car. It's like, well, you know, I can't drive every car. I have to narrow it down to sort of do I want a sports car? Do I want to
drive them all.
You can't even drive all the cars in Forza. Yeah.
But you can get them now when you buy them. So that's good.
I think you got to make some choices if you're a gamer. And I think that most of the people that are listening to this probably are pretty, you know, devout and diehard about the gaming that they play. And I've had to do some soul searching around all of this stuff as well, because obviously we try to cover as much as we can in our programming. And, I've just made a real effort to back away from a lot of the free to play, kind of trick the audience into, you know, spending money with us type of experiences out there. And I know that there's lots of people working and they want to believe in their products and stuff on these titles. And there are some good ones. There are some exceptions, but for the most part, I'm kind of sticking to my guns that I think if a game has a price tag and has some real commitment to the quality of the title, that there's a real value there. And that's what we as, at least speaking on EPN's behalf, that's what we should be focusing on covering is trying to talk about the art, not the sort of business decisions that game companies are making right now.
Yeah, no, I agree. You can weigh in as listeners to the show. You can weigh in. We'll be taking calls. You can call in at 512-518-5714. Again, 512-518-5714. Christian, I'm curious about what you think the most important story this week was.
What started off as maybe a slow news week. There's a lot of stuff, and I'm kind of torn. I mean, I think I'll tease this if maybe we can get into it more. I think the Game Jam reality show debacle is fascinating and fascinating to read if you're interested in that. If you don't have time to talk about it, it's crazy.
Go ahead. Explain what that is.
Okay, so I don't know if it's my story, but it's crazy. So anyway.
Too late, story.
Too late. Game_Jam was a reality TV show that indies walked out on like the first official day of filming. And I'm summarizing a lot of this. It started out as a smaller project that was going to be meant for YouTube with Maker, now owned by Disney, at a $500 million acquisition. This is before that. And the project. And it seemed like it was pitched to these people as, hey, we're going to do a game jam and we're going to film it. And here we go. And then it started becoming a bigger project and sponsors got involved. And there were, you know, rumors and allegations that, you know, they couldn't even drink water unless it was out of a Mountain Dew can that was emptied. And then you could have water or otherwise everything was Mountain Dew branded. And then producers were walking around trying to, you know, really reality show incite fights and asking questions about what, like super leading type questions, things, you know, why aren't women as good at designing video games as men, and just like really making this thing
being a reality show. basically.
Yes, a big brother. You're trapped in a house, sleazy, trashy reality show. And as more and more crap hit the fan, you know, I think kudos for these people for standing up for themselves and being like, this isn't what I signed up for. And I think the biggest thing is they were all, while this didn't ever come up because the production stopped, they were all under contracts where they couldn't use any of the work or promote any of their work they were creating during this time or before. And basically, they were blocked out of their livelihood for however long this show was going to be in development and production and release. And even in, I believe, the version of the contract I saw, you know, even things that they created outside of this reality show.
Yeah, the media blackout. Unbelievable.
Yeah, a complete media blackout for anything, and I think it was like anything electronic or something like that, like super broad language. And it's fascinating because I think a game jam, I don't know if a reality show, but there's so many awesome
maybe?
Documentaries now could be so fascinating. And this, I almost wish that there was a film crew filming the film crew making this reality show because this is...
Yeah, but it's not any crazy. Different than any other reality show. I mean, I agree with you, but it's also, it's kind of like, well, maybe this can serve as an example of how all reality shows are made.
Right. I think the difference is the untruths or the lies that were told or how the scope of the project changed after, you know, some really cool indie devs were brought in on the project and then the scope changed out from under them and contracts were changed and it became more and more of this thing. I think a lot of people now, if you go to, you know, submit to be on Survivor or Amazing Race now after 22 seasons or whatever it is, you know what you're getting into. These were a group of people that signed up for one thing and then it slowly became this reality TV show torture chamber.
I think honestly, living in Los Angeles and having friends that have worked on reality shows or producers on reality shows, I think that just the major difference is that this group of people weren't game for it. They weren't down. And most of the time, the people that they get on the reality shows are down. They'll do whatever.
They want to be famous. They use the reality sort of as springboard for. An alternative career. They want to leave whatever they've been doing, or they want some kind of fame and access. And that sort of flies in right in the face of what I think game makers want to do. They want their work to kind of speak for themselves, and usually they have to work with other people. And I think most of the people on a game team don't want any one person becoming more famous than any other person, because it completely disrupts the dynamic of what it takes to collaborate and build these very complex pieces of entertainment.
Yeah,
I've seen that happen over and over again too. Like anytime anybody's been called out in a magazine and had a photo spread or brought out in a kind of a solitary way and try to play this fame game, which is I think what these guys were trying to do with this stuff. It really makes game makers uncomfortable.
I was going to ask you that exact question. Do you guys think that there's a downside to that in the sense that there's something about auteurship in video games or sort of spotlighting the creators that is lost if no one stands up and goes, I'm responsible. There's no, I don't think the public understands. The public at large doesn't understand that a development studio does this or what the roles are at a development studio or what the roles are in creating a game. They're not conscious of that, I don't think. And that might be a bad thing.
It is if you compare it to other media, but I think one of the things that the games industry has just done a terrible job with from the very beginning is kind of making the story about this industry palatable to a broader audience and actively working to help create those stories and get those stories out there. The industry has relied on too much fanboyism all the way along, on too many people that are already converted and already, it's like this concentric circle of everybody just talking inwards about their love and their passion and their fire for games. And I think that game development is one of the most interesting creative mediums that human beings have ever done. It can be the most, incredible. But the industry at large needs to work on some really cool ways to help tell the story. And things like Indie Game the Movie, while fantastic, And I couldn't believe the quality of work and applaud the endeavor wholeheartedly. It's kind of sad that it takes Kickstarter and, you know, a couple of kids from Winnipeg, you know, risking everything to build something like that. This is a sophisticated medium, and they should be figuring out ways to tell their stories in you know, more sophisticated ways.
Did either of you read the New Yorker article, The Guilt of Video Game Millionaires?
Yes.
Is fascinating, and I think exactly linked to this, where, you know, trying not to play into stereotypes, because they're often wrong, but there's usually enough truth in it to perpetuate the stereotype, right? And I think a lot of people get into gaming or developing for gaming, it's not a very social experience often, right? It's long hours of an individual sitting at a computer working very hard. And I think then to have that person go out and basically try to do a press junket in a hotel room, like the way movie stars are accustomed to doing now, is something that these developers often aren't used to and didn't get into, you know, their business to do. And I think that's part of the, so the New Yorker article just talks about some indie devs that have struggled with the financial success of their game. And this came up first with, you know, the Flappy Bird creator talking about, you know, the spotlight he received from his game and how it was too much and what he didn't want. And the New Yorker article goes into Ridiculous Fishing and Team Meat and some of these people that created these super successful games. And then you struggle with, what does this mean? What's your follow-up? And these aren't people looking to create blockbusters. And even, I think it even applies some in Hollywood. I mean, there's been some great interviews with Chris Evans, Captain America, talking about how he thinks he's done after his contract with Marvel, and he resisted signing with Marvel because they wanted him for a 9-picture deal originally, and he only signed when he negotiated it down to a 6 because he didn't want, you know, fame as so much. He wanted to act. And I think a lot of people now look at success and think, like, that's what I want. That's the thing that I need. And they forget the flip side of that and the darkness that can often come with it and how it can take away the joy from creating. And it's a tough problem.
Yeah. And you see that happen quite a bit in the game industry too, where you see developers kind of, rise up in ranks, and then suddenly they're in charge of huge teams and they're sort of removed a little bit from creative decisions, and they're mostly just dealing with manpower and stuff like that. But
perhaps
I have
Ken
to tell
Levine
you
at Irrational.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, though, exactly, Ken Levine at Irrational. I have to tell you, though, that I've been visiting game studios since 1995. And right from the get-go, you know, I had people all over the place. And we, for, you know, often cases, we were the first television cameras meeting with these people and putting them on television. And we did isolate interview ease, and we did put them in front of the camera. And from the get-go, we had people sort of telling us that this was going to be difficult, that these were going to be very, smart but shy individuals that may not be great on camera. And they were dead wrong. These are some of the most intelligent people out there. And I feel like what we know about game development is that it's very hard. But what we don't know enough about with game development is that it is incredibly social and that it is incredibly collaborative and that it takes a lot of team building and a lot of moving away from the office to create cohesive teams. We don't know enough about the fragility of these teams, and we see awesome studios close down all the time, which is really tragic. It's some of the most tragic storytelling in the game industry. We need to explore that more. We need to explore the dynamics, the interpersonal dynamics that it takes to create this thing, and talk less about how these guys are savants or they have Asperger's or whatever. You know, I mean, they're intelligent, they're articulate, they are social, and they're very interesting. And one of the reasons why I've always shied away from producing a reality show is that I hate the medium. I hate the way that it has become this ticket to fame for a lot of people. And I also didn't believe in the idea of turning these individuals into stars as much as these teams. And that's very hard to do. And you need some very, very smart, passionate people that care about the medium of building the stories for television to do something in reality that really honors this medium well. And, you know, frankly, that's why we haven't seen that so far.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And I suspect that as the medium grows, as it matures, and we stop having sort of old media people reporting on these things in a distancing kind of way where they're like, oh, look what these crazy kids are up to, and more about people who grew up with it and are ingrained in the culture reporting on it organically because they're inside it and are maturing to the point where they're the people, you know, creating news stories, creating television shows. I think that's going to be a natural progression that it's just, and we're seeing it already, right? You know, there's already glimpses of it, and the sentiment that you're expressing, Victor, is right in line, I think, with where we're headed and people taking it more seriously. And this whole indie dev movement, I mean, I think those two stories that you shared, Christian, are indicative of this mentality among indie devs. Authenticity is the important thing. And I think there's a double-edged sword, but I think for the most part it should be applauded. And I think that that's a harbinger of things to come. We're going to see more and more of people taking it seriously, it looked at as an art form, and legitimate coverage being the norm. I certainly hope so.
Yeah, me too. And I, as much as I love all of this indie stuff too, I mean, I really don't want it to usher in the era of, 70 million indie teams out there. And we don't have lots of great AAA caliber production studios, you know, because I love the bigger, the more ambitious, AAA scale titles out there. And I don't want them to be in jeopardy.
That's why we have Amy Hennig joining Visceral Games and working on Star Wars.
Yes.
Is this your other story of the week, Christian?
That's my fanboy story of the week. It's two things that I'm very excited about. If I were listening to me right now, if you were to say this, Jeff, I'd be like, yeah, but nothing's been announced. What are you talking about? But me saying it, I'm like, I'm so excited.
Well, this story was submitted by @FinalMaxStorm, among others. And we've been talking about Amy Hennig's fate for the last few weeks when it was announced that she left Naughty Dog and all the fallout from that. She, of course, was the creative director of all of the Uncharted's up to this point, 1, 2, and 3. And now it looks like she's going to be creative director of a Star Wars game over at Visceral. And yeah, I think two great tastes that taste great together, right? I mean, that's
phenomenal, yeah.
And it sounds like she's a genuine fan of Star Wars. I mean, all the press coming out of this, it seems to indicate that the reason that she was so excited to take this position is that she genuinely digs Star Wars and wants to make an awesome Star Wars game. And the idea of a Star Wars game that is infused with any Amy Hennig style storytelling has me extremely excited.
Absolutely. And also with, you know, the Andrew Wilson, the CEO of EA, coming out and saying that they've been paying attention to what Warner's has been doing with the Arkham franchise and saying, we want a piece of that. So to have that level of commitment and authenticity, that they're striving for from an internal team that has proven themselves to be incredible, bodes well, you know. And I think very necessary for EA, very necessary for a high-profile title for this business, because I think we need lots of AAA, huge-scale games to keep people entertained on PlayStation 4s and Xbox Ones and Wii U's and such. And I think this is, you know, the perfect team coming together to build what should be an incredible game. I can't wait.
Yeah, my only hope is that it isn't really tied to the Episode 7 storyline in any way, that it's its own sort of corner of the Star Wars universe, and they can be as creative and innovative as they want to be because they've cut out their own little corner of that universe, and they don't have to play in anybody else's sandbox, you know?
What would you say if Starkiller came back?
I'd be down. I mean, that would be cool. I was excited about the idea of that when it was a thing. So
I think that would be pretty rad. I think that would be pretty incredible. I hope that they play with Episode 4, and I hope that it's EA going, this is just the beginning.
Right. Yeah. Well, clearly Star Wars is going to be in our lives for a long time in a big way from a lot of different mega corporations. So we shall see.
what's yours, Jeff? So what's your story of the week?
Well, before we get to my story of the week, we have to thank our sponsor, Squarespace. Squarespace is awesome. It is a service that I genuinely use every single day. I love it. I have my own website housed on Squarespace, built with Squarespace, edited with Squarespace. It's fantastic. It's the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, or online store, which is cool. It's so easy to create an online store, which is something that I think a lot of people are intimidated by. You can get a free trial and 10% off by visiting squarespace.com/DLC and using our offer code. Now, I have to preface this by saying we let Christian come up with the offer code this month. So the offer code is VITA. VITA, because we know Christian is a huge fan of the Vita.
Me too.
we got two Vita lovers on the show this week. So remember that promo code VITA, Vita, and you'll get 10% off. You'll help support our show, and you'll use a really, really cool service that makes it so easy to create awesome websites that look great. They have templates. They have really beautiful design templates that you can use. And then they've got this drag and drop editing style. It's WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. All you have to do is drag things in from your desktop, drag pictures, slide things around. It makes it very intuitive, very easy. And if you are confused by that or intimidated in any way, they have 24/7 support through live chat and email located in New York City and Dublin. They're really super supportive people. I have firsthand experience using that as well. They get back to you right away. It's awesome. The plans are inexpensive. They start at $8 a month and include a free domain name if you sign up for a year. The online store, the commerce that's built in is awesome. Every site comes with an online store if you so choose. And you can start your free trial with no credit card. So it is truly free. A lot of these sites are, well, it's a free trial, but put your credit card in and we'll start charging you without you knowing. No, not Squarespace. It's super free, the freest of free. And you can start building your website today. Go to squarespace.com/DLC and use that promo code VITA, V-I-T-A. We thank Squarespace for supporting the show. I love Squarespace. You can check out jeffcanada.com and see my site, which is built on Squarespace. All right. So back to the show. My story of the week.
Did you just make that all up off the top of your head, Jeff?
Well, I mean, it's based in truth.
That was awesome.
I mean, it's firsthand experience. I have experience with those guys.
It was great.
You hang out with Jeff long enough and you know that every 30 minutes or so he just says that.
Yeah. If only Squarespace could sponsor my life, it would be so much easier. No, I like talking about companies that I actually use because it's easy. It's easy to talk about things that you genuinely dig.
Absolutely.
I think you guys picked out really great stories this week. We had a one I think that I would want to pick out because it was one of my predictions at the end of last year when we were doing Weekend Confirmed, and it keeps coming true, and I have to, you know, toot my own horn here, is yet another high production value drama television show is being made and released on a video game platform. So Microsoft announced they're teaming with this UK studio to create a sci-fi show called Humans. And it looks kind of cool. It's about a modern family that lives with a highly developed robotic servant known as Synth. So I just like the fact that both Microsoft and Sony are getting into the making television shows that are awesome for geeks business. And it's something that I really thought would happen this year, and it seems to be. And there's even talk of them kind of leveraging their first-party IPs like Fable and Age of Empires and Gears of War and Forza to bring even more shows to the Xbox platform. What do you think about this, Vic?
I think it makes perfect sense. I think that's what we're kind of facing right now, is you're pledging allegiance to sort of the new network concept. You know, I mean, these games and these game systems and the libraries that they kind of hold within them are trying to lock us into staying there for as long as possible. And I think that's kind of what consoles will evolve into anyways. I think PlayStation Now from Sony kind of tips to that, is that it's not so much a physical manifestation or a physical piece of hardware as much as, you know, kind of a network, kind of staying within a branded identity. And I think linear programming as well as nonlinear programming is the smart play. And Microsoft is relatively new in this field, so I think that's why they're choosing some pretty high-profile partners and high-profile programming experts and stuff. Sony, on the other hand, has linear programming studios up the wazoo, and it's going to be very interesting to see how they each sort of counter each other over the next few years.
Yeah. What do you think, Spicer?
It's all exciting. I think the skeptic in me, it just goes back to what we were talking about with all these different set-top boxes where it's great, but it's I want one box to rule them all. It's annoying to think that, okay, so I'm going to watch this on Xbox One. And I know Xbox tried to create a box to rule them all, but I love content. These shows sound like they could be right up my alley, but it's just now you have to compartmentalize your brain to remember what show is on what service, is on what device.
Yeah.
And it's great because you can watch them whenever you want. You know, it's not like Tuesdays at 10, but it creates... It's more complicated, I think, than it should be for any of these shows to become mainstream successes. I think Netflix got out ahead of the curve with this stuff, and people, you know, Netflix is almost like the Kleenex of streaming services, so they can do that. In LA, there's billboards for, you know, a Hulu original series. No one goes to Hulu for original series. And I think that's what Xbox and Sony are going to need to overcome with this stuff. But because of the install base, hopefully they can position that stuff front and center on their dashboards, essentially, and get that content out. Otherwise, I think it's going to suffer from low viewership. And then I forget if it was Dan or what guest we had on, Jeff, that made this point, is then, you know, how much money can these studios keep investing in something that gets 200,000 eyeballs?
Yeah. Well, let's look at PlayStation Now, which you know, Sony has come out and said that it's going to be available on different devices. They're talking about it on, you know, their PlayStation 3 and their PS4 and their Vitas for now, and then eventually probably the Xperia phones and tablets. But then I think it will also be on iPad and other Android devices. And I think that's what they're positioning here with PlayStation Now. I think that we are looking at playing PlayStation video games and presumably watching PlayStation-funded television programming on an iPad, the most closed, you know, competitor to Sony right now, probably, within 2 years. And mm-hmm. I think that is going to be the tipping point. I don't think Microsoft can say at that point, well, we definitely need to just lock people to our Xbox One if we want to serve up Xbox content.
I think you'll still be opening the Sony app on your iPad to do that, though.
Yes. Yes, you will, for sure. Yeah.
Yes, not you will. Too hard.
No, it's not. But if you're in Netflix already, it's a lot easier to watch one more episode of House of Cards than it is to... I mean, yes,
so
this is...
Channels will be apps then, pretty much, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. Interesting.
What do you guys think about this Borderlands pre-sequel that seems to be a pretty solid rumor that is happening? Randy Pitchford came out a few weeks ago. We talked about it on the show and seemed to have been toying with all of us, saying Borderlands 3, not happening, guys. Don't. It's not even, we haven't even started on it. Don't get excited. And then, of course, well, that's right. Borderlands 3 isn't happening. It's this game that happens between 1 and 2. Kind of cagey, but fun in a certain perspective.
Don't believe anything Randy tells you. He said that Alien game was going to be good.
right. That's
and he is a magician. So
he is a magician.
Just kidding, Randy.
Well, in the campaign of the game, they've been teasing going to the moon for a whole bunch of the DLC and all that stuff. The moon. Well, finally, this looks like this game is going to be set on the moon, which is kind of cool for fans of Borderlands. I unfortunately am unlikely to get excited just because I want the game on the new consoles. I want new Borderlands. And the fact that this is a 360 PS3 and PC title. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure it'll still be lots of fun to play, but you know, I'm in the next gen now. Come on. Let's do this.
And if you were cynical, Borderlands 2 was terrific, but it did feel very samey to the first Borderlands. Part of it was the kind of cell shading. It was great. It was a great game, but it didn't feel like a sort of technological leap over its predecessor. And you're right. We are in this generation now. We want games that will excite us, like what Batman Arkham Knight is doing for the PS4 and the Xbox One. We want to feel excited about this leap into next gen.
I'm surprised they're not doing one. I mean, I feel like any game that comes out also, especially if it's at day and date on PC, why they can't release that up-resed version on current gen consoles, on the Xbox One and PS4. It seems like they're leaving money on the table. Of course, I don't understand anything about game development other than I want great games and I want them now. But like, if they have that higher res PC port made,
they will do that. But that's such a cynical way to approach building software for the PS4 and the Xbox One. That doesn't make anybody happy. It's a placator.
I agree.
It's not ideal, but
I'm sure they will do that. But you know, I think we're kind of suffering at the hands of that right now. You know, we're kind of like Thief had to contend with its platform limitations. It was so refreshing to play Infamous Second Son and just see like the engines roaring on the PS4.
Yeah, because Evenfall, which is awesome, didn't start its life as a next gen game. It started its life as a current gen title.
And the 360 version looks pretty good.
It does.
We saw first
footage of that this week. There's one last story I want to bring up before we move on to the playlist, because this was submitted by so many people, including at Space Bob and at Jeff Muck. And that is our friend of the show, I know he's a friend of yours as well, Vic, Adam Sessler, announced that he is leaving Revision 3 and leaving games journalism altogether.
Yeah.
And so many people submitted this, I thought we should mention it. We'd been talking to Adam about being on this show, in fact, for several weeks, and it was clear there was something happening that was preventing him from doing that. And it sounds like he's moving into the world of consulting. His Twitter page now describes him as the president of Theory Head, which is a consultancy for entertainment and media. I mean, obviously, we wish him all the best. I don't know if you guys had any other comment.
Well, I mean, we talked a little bit about this on our podcast on the Vic's Basement podcast, and we've had Adam on the podcast in the past. It's a little I'm a little melancholy about it. You know, I've had Adam as a competitor and as a network partner because we used to be on the same network together, and you know, we've known each other for most of those 16 years. You know. And it's really kind of surreal for me it was surreal for me to see G4 go down. It was surreal for me to see X-Play, cease being produced. And then I was happy to see that he had moved to this kind of new wave of media with Revision 3 and was doing all kinds of online video. And then to see him leave is... I don't know. I think it's a shame, and I feel that there is there's a big story here with all of the journalists that I've known for a long time. There's a big chunk of people making the migration either to work internally at publishing studio, you know, companies, or leaving games industry altogether, or having to ratify the way that they're employed in so many different ways, whether they used to work for a magazine or a website or whatever. It's just so much tumultuous change, especially in the last 5 or 6 years. And it's, it change is inevitable in media, but it's surreal, you know? I cannot believe that an industry of this many billions with this many million players around the world cannot sustain a 24/7 television network. You know, when you can have sporting coverage on multiple 24/7 television networks, you can have a network devoted just to golf, you know, like it kind of blows my mind. And it's not just the idea of just a TV network. I guess that's what EPN is about. You know, like we're trying to do more than just be a daily show or just do what we've done in the past. But
yeah, I think, and I applaud you for that as well. And I think all of us that create media in this space are doing our best to create those kinds of experiences, and I think people are enjoying them. But there's, I think while we weren't looking, Twitch happened, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think Twitch is kind of becoming that 24/7 network that we all, that is like the Wild West, but it seems to be what a lot of people really want. I know that I will certainly miss Adam's voice, because he, especially in the last few years, was such an advocate for sanity in the space, and I relate to that in a big way. And you know, he spoke eloquently and on target about quote unquote console wars and fanboyism and just civility online in a way that I resonated with me, and I think his voice in the public will certainly be missed, and I hope he finds a way to continue contributing publicly, even while he does this new venture.
Yeah, well said.
And we should also say too,
articulate and passionate.
Yeah, absolutely, he was. Yeah, we should also say too that another Revision 3 Games personality, the very first guest we ever had on this show, DLC, Anthony Carboni, also announced his departure, and so we wish him the best as well.
What's going on over there?
I don't know. I certainly know, I have experience departing from Revision 3.
You were there too.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I don't know. I hope those guys do great things, as I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
Christian, you have anything to add? Oh, did we lose Christian? We may have lost him. That usually happens once or twice a show. Christian. Well, let's move on out of Story of the Week and into the playlist. The playlist is the stuff we've been enjoying this week. Victor, you have been playing Luftrazers, among other things.
Yes, I love this game.
Yeah? Tell me about it.
Well, it's such a... and I pronounce it Luftrazers.
Oh, as you should.
I have to enjoy that German. Vlambeer is the developer. These are the guys that made a mint off of Ridiculous Fishing last year. Actually, they're in that New York Times article that Christian was talking about. And this is an old school sort of Time Pilot-esque shooter that you can play on the Vita. It's on the PC. It's on the PlayStation 3. And you're basically having to deal with the effects of gravity on your craft as you sort of power up and you take out all kinds of enemies. It's very leaderboard driven. It's very much about unlocking new power-ups and unlocking new abilities. You can modify the engine. You can modify the body of your craft. You can dive into the water and erupt out of a submarine and destroy it. You can take on battleships and blimps. It's kind of monochromatic and old school style, but it's just addictive. It's thumb candy. It's one of the reasons why I can't put down my Vita.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds great. I heard there's some kind of controversy because you're playing as the Nazis. Is that right?
Well, it's an alternate history. It's a take, you know, and you know, to be frank, I didn't really pay super attention to all the details in the story. It has some German-esque kind of artistic sensibilities about it, but it's fiction, and it's supposed to be sort of like prototype airplanes and stuff like that. Certainly was not offended by any of the characterizations or any of the storytelling in the game. We've seen lots of these alternative history type things in the past in video games, and it just falls neatly into that.
That's cool. I'm hearing word that Christian lost internet completely, so we apologize for losing Christian. I think he went to put his application in at Riv 3 Games.
That's cool, right. Okay.
I want to talk a little bit about Elder Scrolls Online, because I am in love with this game.
Right on.
Frequent listeners will know that I am a MMO gaming fanatic, but this feels like the MMO game that I've always wanted, because it feels like an Elder Scrolls game. It feels like a single player role playing game that just happens to have lots of other people running around in it. It doesn't have that cookie cutter formula that so many MMOs seem to have post EverQuest. I was going to say post WoW, but even post EverQuest. And it feels almost like you're playing a single player game for the most of the game. It's the first MMO where I am playing for the experience of the world and the story more than playing for getting my next piece of loot. And that's awesome. I love me some loot. I like loot games. You know, I'm a fan of getting awesome loot. But this game, for the first time, really communicates a story. I'm interested in the dialogue options that I have, just like in an Elder Scrolls game, just like I'm playing Skyrim or Oblivion. I feel like they've nailed that. And they've done so many unique, interesting things with how the skill system works. Like, you're not... You pick a class when you start the game, and you pick a race, and you pick a faction that you're a part of. But that you're not restricted to that class. It's not that if I pick a sorcerer, I can only wear cloth armor and cast spells. No, anybody can wear any kind of armor, and anybody can use any type of weapon. It's just that those, as you use those things, just like in an Elder Scrolls game, as you use those things, you level them up. And as you level them up, they give you certain benefits and skill trees that give you benefits for wearing more of those types of armor. So if you're a guy that uses a lot of magic, wearing light armor is going to give you bonuses to magicka and spell and regen, spell regen and spell damage and stuff. So you're just incentivized to wear those type of armor types rather than restricted to that kind of armor type. It's so elegant and beautiful and awesome. I just really dig that because it gives you a lot more freedom in how you want to craft your character. There's all these shades between classes that you can do. And you're basically given five skill slots that you can plug in all these different skills that you're learning and getting skill points in. So you can craft your specific type of character. I think it learns a little from Guild Wars. It learns a little from the Elder Scrolls, you know, single-player games. And it marries those things in a really fun, effective way. The only downside is that it's really, I think, kind of overwhelming when you first start the game because there's so many options and you're intimidated by where you're going to place, or at least I was, I was going to place my skill points. But the cool thing is they're giving you skill points at such a rapid rate. You get skill points for leveling, but you also get skill points for completing some quests. And there's much like Crackdown or something, or Infamous Second Son, there's skill point shards placed around the environment that you can find. I mean, the game does such a great job of making exploration a thing, rather than being an MMO, which is sort of like go to this next town, get the 12 quests that are all the dudes are standing right next to each other, and they send you into a new area. You do all 12 of those quests, go to the next area, you know, wash, rinse, repeat. This is literally. I'm playing it like an Elder Scrolls game. I see something interesting on the horizon. I walk toward it. I will usually encounter someone that tells me an interesting story and gives me a quest, and I'm off doing that quest.
Playing this alone, though. Are you playing with other people?
Well, you bring up a very good point. My usual experience of playing an MMO is I have a group of guys that I usually play MMOs with, and we get on Skype and we play games and we pretty much tune out the game and just talk to each other and play the game, right? And just click through the quest, blah, 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 who cares? What do I need to kill? How many of them? Pelts do I need to give you? This game, you can't do that. You can't do
this
that.
This is a no chatting game. This is the game you get lost in the world in.
Yeah. And I mean, even Star Wars The Old Republic, which, you know, had completely voice acted like this quest givers, I never felt like I really needed to listen to them. This game,
because you were just going from one location to the other. It was one fetch quest after another.
Exactly. And for the first time, I feel like there's stakes and there's consequences and there's really meaty decisions. The only time I've been playing with other, and honestly, that's a problem because I don't want to be on Skype with people while I'm playing this. However, getting into dungeons, when you can group up and do dungeons, it is fun playing with other people. And there are certain skills that you'll do that another person gets an option to contribute on. So you create these combos, kind of like the old Marvel Legends games. Mm-hmm. And then the PvP, which I've never been a big fan of PvP in games before. But for the first time in this game, it is unbelievable and thrilling because you do these castle raids where you're literally building trebuchets and storming the castle. It feels like the Battle of Helm's Deep because you get like 40 or 50 people on horseback riding over the plains like a giant cascading army of doom coming down at you, and you're like, here they come, they're coming for us, man, the trebuchet, get on the top of the castle, keep, shoot down at them. And then they start taking battering rams into this wall of your keep, and you're trying to prevent them. And then meanwhile, your other team is going after their keep. It is so well done and so thrilling, and it feels so epic.
Awesome.
I love this game.
Awesome, man. Well, I've installed it, but I've been a little intimidated because I know this is you boot this up, there goes 10 hours.
Oh man, yeah. That's the problem is I've literally like it's one of these games that I was thinking about this week. Actually, I was going to bring this up with you, Christian. Thinking of like a sort of a review scale for video games, always a tricky proposition. And I was thinking about Siskel and Ebert with the binary thumbs up or thumbs down, I feel is a little too simplistic. But I was thinking about this trinary review system that we might adopt on this show. I was thinking like DLC, it's you know, don't care to play it, like playing it, or compulsively playing it. And this is one of those compulsively playing it games for me. Like all I want to do is get a few more minutes on Elder Scrolls Online.
That sounds wonderful, man. I'm very excited. You just sold that game beautifully.
Christian, you're back.
Sort of.
Maybe
Christian!
Not.
Christian!
You had him. Boy. Los Angeles internet connections are fun. Vic, what other stuff's on your playlist?
Well, I've been, this is stuff that I keep playing. And we reviewed it, or I've taken a look at it on the show, on the shows already, but I keep going back to them. Second Son, I beat the game, but I still want to go and get everything. I want 100% everything. And it's so fun. It's just, it's not necessarily the best of the Infamous games because it wasn't really a surprise. It was just an elegant paint sweep across stuff that was kind of familiar. And I actually wasn't a huge fan of Delson Rowe as a character, but I, of course, as a superhero fanatic, love the abilities of the character. And they rendered Seattle so beautifully, and it's very close to where I live here in Vancouver, so the rain feels just like home. And I love playing the game. It's really addictive. Titanfall operates on a totally different level. It's one of those games where if you don't have a whole bunch of time, you can just jump in and have this kind of quarter-munching arcade-style blast for a little while and then bounce out. And it's always rewarding. Every single time I play Titanfall, I'm impressed by it, and I have a great time with it. I do miss that there wasn't a single-player campaign in the thing, but because I like the world, I like the richness of everything. But even as a multiplayer-only deal, it is so fun. It's just so rewarding to play that. And NBA 2K14, I keep going back to it. Obviously, it's March Madness, and basketball's on everybody's minds right now. But I love this game. I loved it on the PS4 and Xbox One. And I was recently in Los Angeles visiting a friend, and we had a couple of heated games. It took a little while to get used to all the controls again, but God, that's a fantastic experience. And
so here's my question for you: Is have you been spending any money on 2K14?
No, not at all. And especially because we're being pushed to spend money on these lower price games so much, and maybe it's just something that I witness because we look at these at so many games, but because I do see so many games and I see that sort of handout thing, like, would you like to pay us more money? Hand all the time. When I see it in Forza or I see it in NBA or these bigger console things, I go, no way, Jose. You got a $60 thing with this title or a $70 thing now in Canada because of the dollar not working so well. That's enough. They should ease up on that. And I've been talking about this on the shows a little bit too. I don't think the answer to people gravitating towards free to play or lower cost things in mobile and therefore not buying as many console games, these AAA style huge console titles, the answer isn't to charge them $70 and give them less stuff, and then also have your handout to charge them for other DLC and silly things that should be included in. No, the answer is, think about the pricing a little bit more and think about the value that people are getting a little more and maybe readjust some of these price points so that this becomes less of a prestige, luxury item for people to buy for themselves and more of a, oh my God, I can't miss this content kind of item, which is how movies operate and how books operate. and music operates and every other medium out there except video games.
Well, yeah. I think that's because video games got to a point where they were giving away too much content, and now they realized, holy crap, we can't, like, you know, Captain America, Winter Soldier, great movie, gives you a two-hour movie, and you go and watch it. And when it comes out on Blu-ray, if you want to watch it that way, you'll get extras and bonuses. But, I mean, some of the video games, some of the Splinter Cell games, Halo 4, the Call of Duty games, there was a lot of content in those games that, you know, I don't know if it's sustainable at that development level. I'm not a fan of being nickel and dimed in my games either, but I understand it, I think, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, here's the answer to that, though, because, you know, you bring up a great point with Captain America. Marvel didn't have to spend $140 million on that movie. We would have all gone anyway. They would have made that $100 million anyway. But they did, and they more than gave us our money's worth for the, you know, 15 to 20 bucks that we spent, whether you saw it on IMAX or whatever. Video games are exclusionary. They are asking us to make a decision and make a statement on whether we're a PlayStation fan or an Xbox fan or a whatever fan. So having to make a call on what machine to buy, that's step one, and that hurts the market. Step two is that they're very expensive, and the information around them is not very proliferate unless you really know about them and have to, you know, and you want to keep digging around this material. Imagine how many people would be getting into these interactive experiences. And you look at something like Splinter Cell, or you look at something like Grand Theft Auto, or although that doesn't really need help for sales, but there's lots of great games out there that do. If they were $20, people would think less about picking them up. If they were $20 at retail. Now, I know that's a sweeping sea change of looking at the industry completely differently, but isn't that exactly what the console business needs right now? Is a complete difference in the way that they sort of structure their business model? Or isn't what they're facing, you know, being stamped out and being overrun by free-to-play match three titles? You know, it's horrifying.
At the very least, give me a discount for buying it digitally. You know, if I'm allowed to buy it digitally, totally. But it's $60, and I'm looking at, you know, Amazon giving me a sale for buying it physically, and then I'm looking at being able to sell that game back, you know, and have a little value out of it. It makes no sense for me to spend $60 on a thing that just sits on my hard drive and I delete eventually. You gotta at least give me a help in that sense.
The movie industry, and you know what? People compare games to movies all the time, but I think games are more analogous with albums, with LPs. And I know that business has completely been shattered by digital downloads, but there is a replayability around music that you purchase. You keep getting something from it after you make that initial investment. Well, albums would never have hit the mainstream acceptance that they've received if they were $70, quite frankly.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
There's a $20 psychological entry point there where it's like, $20 and I get a lot of value out of that. I'm going to drop that. I'm going to spend the money on that. And the games industry should have been thinking more along the lines that this is can't-miss entertainment. And anybody that knows about games knows what is or isn't can't-miss entertainment. But the challenge is, the industry has sort of limited itself from allowing more people to know about the stuff that it makes because it is a luxury item. And at $70 or $60, that's exactly how most people look at it. They don't choose the titles, they choose what they can afford. They don't just pick up everything. They say, well, I only have room for one game this month or one game this in 6 months. And that's crazy. That's so limiting because, as you, the three of us know, games are the best form of entertainment that we've created as human beings.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Christian, what's on your playlist?
Well, today I've been playing Time Warner Cable Frustrations.
No, we've been playing that with you. That's a multiplayer game.
I love that game.
It's pretty good. I'm glad you got it. I think I just prestiged it, though. I have a workaround going that hopefully remains viable.
Did you play as pissed off customer?
It's out in my neighborhood right now.
Oh, wow.
Sweet. Otherwise, I am still plowing my way through Infamous, and I know it's not that long of a game, but I'm taking my time with it. And now I'm finally settling into Forza 5, which I've had for months, but haven't really put any time into. I feel like now's the time. Like, they've made a bunch of great changes to that game that I think make the game much more enjoyable or less frustrating in terms of, you know, if you choose to download a car, you actually get to play with that car instead of it costing you in-game and out-of-game and then back in-game again. I really enjoy the driving in it. I think the drivatars are a little wonky, having, you know, spending some time with them. But it's a great game, and I think especially if you're picking up an Xbox One now, some of the deals out there are crazy. I think there are deals as of right now when we're recording this where you can get the Forza bundle or the Titanfall bundle for $450 with...
He's going to leave us hanging.
It was such a... such a great way to leave it off with. Oh man, so with, exciting.
I think he was going to say, or if you want to trade in four Android Fire TV consoles, you can get an Xbox One.
Exactly. Yeah. I think he was going to say with, I think you get a full year of Xbox Live with that now.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
Yeah, that's
well,
what I was reading.
You could really just
least.
Insert anything into the end of that sentence there. What else could you
do? with a free trip to Spain.
Jamaica.
Trip to Jamaica. Okay, excellent.
Which is what everybody gets.
Christian, now you're just messing with us.
No, I'm not. Have you played any Marvel superheroes yet?
No, I haven't. Nope. I'm sorry. Elder Scrolls owns MMO. Me. Vic probably has.
What, the MMO?
No, the Lego game.
Oh, yeah, the Lego. It's fantastic.
It's so good.
In my hands right now, I've got Lego Iron Patriot. That's so weird because Warner Brothers sends out the little Lego minifigs with them, and in my hand I've got Lego Iron Patriot as you're saying that. It's crazy. It's surreal.
Yeah, we were talking, Jeff, like where are the Marvel games? Also talked about how Cap, the movie Captain America 2, really captures Captain America's movements really well. And you talk about that on one of your NLB minis where you review the movie. And Lego Marvel Superheroes really does a great job of making these Lego pieces move like their characters from the comics. It has all the Lego trappings that might be annoying to people and trite at this point, but it's a really phenomenal game if you're a Marvel zombie.
100%. And a funny thing about the Captain America movements, it also speaks to this question about where are Disney's Marvel video games. Chris Evans was being interviewed for the EPKs Captain America 2, and he talked about the fact that they looked at Next Level's Captain America game for Xbox and PlayStation 3, and they liked how the character moved in the video game and they incorporated some of that stuff into the new movie. And
I liked that game a lot.
Yeah, that was a really nice Captain America game. It wasn't as good as Arkham, but it was a really good job, and it would have been great for that exact team to be given the resources to build up another fantastic game. It would have been awesome.
Yeah.
I can't believe that Disney, I mean, they're doing it with Star Wars, but they have these mega franchises where they're training us and they're training the world to care about all of these things and know about the intricacies of these characters and these stories. There should be games based around these things and not just mobile iOS titles that look like they were put together in 6 months. You know, it's really tragic. Some of my favorite video games are superhero video games, and I can't believe that we don't have a Cap one right now.
Yeah, it's pretty surprising, especially how popular the movie seems to be.
Totally.
But before we leave the playlist, I want to hear from a caller and hear what's on their playlist, and we'll start doing this every week. So we got some people on the line. I have a call from 607. What is on your playlist or has been this week?
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. So this week I've been playing, still been playing Guild Wars 2, if you can believe that. I've been playing Kerbal Space Program. They just released a new patch, so now you can actually capture asteroids in the game, and that part was sponsored by NASA, which is really cool. So I've been playing that a bunch too.
What keeps you coming back to Guild Wars 2?
You know what? It's that I can play. I cannot play it for 2 months and not feel guilty about it. I can come back to it whenever I want because I've already paid my $60 for the game, and I know that there's going to be a ton of new content for it whenever I join back in.
Man, he makes a great point. The idea of them not charging that monthly subscription fee is pretty revolutionary in that space. And you know, as a big fan of Elder Scrolls, it is a bummer that it's a $15 a month commitment.
I liked Pete Hines from Bethesda's transparency about whether that was the right move or not for them. And I guess time will tell. But, you know, he was up front. They took a stab and they said, well, we're going to deliver as much content as we can to make that 15 bucks, you know, make it worth that 15 bucks. And the market will decide. And I guess they can do what the Lord of the Rings Online and several other MMOs have done, is eventually go even the Star Wars MMO went free to play, yeah. And I, you know, that can actually be a boost for revenue.
Yeah, they just the trailer for the first big content update called Craglorn hit today, which looks awesome. Adds a whole bunch of content into Elder Scrolls Online. So I hope they keep up with that. I mean, a lot of these plans you see, and there'll be delays, and they'll fall behind. So I'm hoping they keep up, because I'm really digging that game.
You know, that's the thing with that game too, is how smart of them to have five single player games that have expanded the whole, you know, Elder Scrolls universe to start with before they ever even attempt to go into the MMO space. I think that's incredibly, you know, indicative of the caliber and the quality that you're experiencing right there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Okay, so it's all been fun and games up to this point, and we've enjoyed talking about news, we've been talking about our playlist, but we got some serious business, because this is the end of March Madness.
March Madness!
We all marched long. We had the impossible task of pitting games head-to-head, one against the other. 32 games entered, were submitted by listeners of the show, voted on by listeners of the show, and week after week after week, we've had to eliminate in this massive bracket, all leading up to this moment, which is why I'm so glad to have Victor Lucas with us, a guy who knows about the history of video games, cares so passionately about video games, because this is our championship round. It has all led to this. Early favorite, number one seed, Super Mario 64, up against Cinderella. Let's be honest, seven seed, Cinderella, unexpected. It destroyed a two seed on its way here. It destroyed a three seed on its way here.
And seven and eight seeds never make the finals.
but it did this time, against all odds. Portal, representing the Spicer division. Super Mario 64 representing the Kanata division, even though not my favorite Super Mario game. But that's okay. That's okay. The people have spoken. There can be only one.
Where did all these game suggestions come from? And this is a fantastic bracket, by the way. Some great stuff in there. But where did they come from?
We literally asked the audience to submit games, and all of the games that were submitted, I compiled into a massive list, and the games that got the most votes were seeded highest. So Super Very Mario cool. 64 is an example of a game that got more votes than any other game. And so it was all ranked based on early votes, and then each round has voting as well. So these are all submitted by listeners of the show.
Awesome.
I probably
would have similar to this for our end of the year Rocket and Reagan Awards. We did a bracket, and it was really fun, very well received. But we've also had our top 100 countdown, and we did a lot of discussion about the best games ever made. And most of these games, probably all of these games, are on our top 100 countdown. And Mario, are we supposed to talk about our picks now, or what are we supposed
to
do?
Yeah, you got
to
decide. Well, you got to help us decide. What would you pick between Super Mario 64 and Portal?
Okay, well, I would absolutely pick Super Mario 64, but Portal is incredible too, and I don't mean to dismiss that quickly. But one of the things that we discovered when we talked about these types of games or these caliber of games is that Super Mario 64, in our top 100, we ended up giving Super Mario 64 number 2, and we gave Grand Theft Auto 3 the first spot. And I'm surprised that Grand Theft Auto 3 isn't listed here, but Vice City is.
Vice City got more votes than Grand Theft Auto 3.
Yeah, but I guess everybody was looking at it as individual titles, and Vice City was a better game. But GTA 3 really kind of ushered in this modern era of mature storytelling in video games, and also this expansive, ambitious technology that allowed us to live inside of these open world environments. And we felt that everything changed after Grand Theft Auto 3, and Super Mario 64 was the first 3D culmination of everything that had come since. All of the 2D training that Nintendo and other game makers had given us for many, many years all sort of crystallized in its first pure form in 3D with Super Mario 64. So both incredibly important games. And Portal, obviously, is an extension on both of those kinds of titles in a lot of ways. But out of these two, I would absolutely have to give it to Super Mario 64.
All right, before I go to Christian, I want you to weigh in on our big controversy. So we had Tetris Gate. Tetris went up against Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, if you notice, in the early rounds, the second round, it went up against Ocarina of Time. And while Ocarina of Time barely eked out the popular vote over Tetris, we vetoed that and went against the will of the people and had Tetris defeat Ocarina of Time. Wow. On the grounds that I think Tetris will be played 100 years from now, and none of the other games on this list will be. And I think Tetris will be played on every device known to man. In fact, this week I got people tweeting me that there was Tetris played on a building and Tetris played on an oscilloscope this week as proof of Tetris's massive supremacy. In fact, in the chat room we have somebody said Tetris or GTFO. So there's definitely right. Tetris contingent. What do you think about Tetris beating Ocarina of Time?
What do I think?
Yes.
I think, there's value in that argument for sure, but...
you disagree.
I hear a Beatles song playing. It's called Let It Be, Jeff. Maybe you've heard of it.
Well, you know, if we had to choose this pick based on which game I'd like to play for the rest of my life, I would want to play Legend of Zelda over and over again rather than Tetris, even though Tetris is one of those games that you close your eyes and you can't help but see the shapes. I'm done. I've played my fair share of Tetris.
Fair enough.
Zelda, I can find that boomerang forever.
All right, Christian, Super Mario 64 or Portal? What does your gut tell you?
Well, quickly, in your defense of Tetris, we were both at James Stevenson's birthday party. People might know him from Week Confirmed or the work he does at Insomniac. And there was a centerpiece for Tetris on one of the coffee tables in his house. And there was no centerpiece for Zelda. So shots
okay.
fired.
All right.
Hey.
Okay.
Story at 11.
Okay. All right. I'm changing my pick then.
Mario 64 is my vote. Portal is such a fantastic game. But after it crept up behind The Last of Us and killed it using only one half of a scissor and a brick to the head, I just can't. Super Mario 64 is still fun to play. It's still a great game. I think if they were to do a full updating of it and high-def graphics, I think it'd still be beautiful. The simplicity of those graphics isn't affected the way some PS1 early polygonal games are. It's still Absolutely. A joy to play. Finding all the stars is still a challenge. And it created a genre, Super Mario 64.
I can't disagree with anything you guys have said. Of course, Super Mario 64 is an extraordinarily important game. But my heart tells me Portal is an experience I prefer. Now, I should say, as I have said every week, that Super Mario 64 is not my favorite Mario game. I think Super Mario World is the best Mario game, and I would take almost every 2D Mario over Mario 64, and I would take many 3D Marios over Mario 64. That isn't to take away its groundbreaking nature and the fact that it is an excellent game, but what game would I rather play over and over? I'd rather play Portal over and over. I'm more grateful that Portal exists as a thing. I think 3D games were going to happen whether or not Mario did it. Mario proved you can do platforming in a 3D space, but I think we would be in a 3D world no matter what. That's where technology was going.
Right.
Portal proved you can do humor. It proved it introduced an incredible mechanic that is mind bending and fun. It's a game that makes me feel smart. It's a game that I enjoy on so many different levels. I would pick Portal.
Even though the puzzles in Portal, once you figure them out, they're diminished quite a bit. You know, I mean, you go into the rooms, you figure out where to put the portal holes, and you kind of know what to do in that game. I guess you could say the same thing about Super Mario 64 if you know all the jumps and twists and turns. I love Portal, but the thing about Portal Go ahead.
There's tons of YouTube videos of people doing crazy stuff in Portal, like things I would never have thought of, you know?
Right. Well, I always think it's only a matter of time until they give Mario a portal gun.
right. But it'll be adorable looking. It'll be a portal gun adorable, made absolutely. Out of balloons and candy canes. All right, let's turn to the phones and see what the people think about this. From the 269 area code, what do you think, Super Mario 64 or Portal?
This is a tough decision, but right off the bat, I'm going to say I'm throwing it for Portal. And really, the reason why is I'm just a Valve fanboy, to be honest. I've cosplayed as Gordon Freeman and gone silent the entire time in costume. And but if I had to choose between the two Valve games, would probably give it to Portal 2, because it's just a brilliant game. It just makes you kind of think differently. It is kind of a one-off game, but once you figure that out for yourself the first time, you just get that rush of I did it, I feel smarter, and you just want more. And it's tough that it's such a short game, because you just want more of it.
Got another vote for Portal, guys.
I can assume he wasn't dressed as Jeff. Gordon Freeman for that call.
Yeah, Jeff. Yeah, and quit calling your family, Jeff.
I got another member of my family. I think my family would actually vote for the Italian plumber, I must say. But we have another caller, international caller. I think I know who might know who this is. 661. What do you think, Super Mario 64 or Portal?
Well, good evening. Finally, I've managed to get through. I just wanted to say that in response and in opposition to the previous call, I've actually dressed up as Mario's moustache. And
it's cosplay versus cosplay.
A silent Mario's.
I've also dressed up as Mario's parents' sense of disappointment with their children. I'd have to say, Super Mario 64, I felt like it was completely revolutionary. And it hailed an era of sort of pre Mario 64 and post Mario 64. And I felt that Jeff sort of diminished its impact, kind of broke my heart a little bit. Hearing him say that those sort of thing. I think to say that games are already moving in that direction, and it was almost by luck that Mario 64 came to being, rather than the fact that it was the first 3D platform that attempted and perfected the genre almost immediately.
Well, he makes a good point. I didn't mean to break his heart. I think that we were going to 3D world, but yes, it did perfect it almost immediately. It showed, I mean, it justified an entirely new controller on the N64. It did a lot of things right.
Well, it created a language. That's the thing that Nintendo kind of should be remembered for, and not so quickly dismissed when people talk about its troubles with the Wii U, is that the language of games, again and again, was crafted by Nintendo software engineers, and they really helped us to understand how to maneuver and control through these worlds with grace. And you know, there like nothing ever caught up on the PlayStation 1 or the Sega Saturn. I mean, I remember reviewing Mario against Tomb Raider, and Tomb Raider was the more mature, more interesting, you know, content and story stuff. But she controlled like a tank, you know. And even Crash Bandicoot at the time was quite revolutionary. But Naughty Dog took some pretty big concessions. You know, it was mostly a 2D platforming game with, you know, 3D polygons. You could move into and out of the screen. But the freedom that Mario gave us was unbelievable. And it really made us feel like, wow, we can go anywhere and do it effortlessly. I think the most interesting platforming 3D of that time that nobody talks about and get forgotten about quite a bit is Jumping Flash, which was a crazy robot platforming game on the PlayStation 1 that really gave people a sense of vertigo. It was a little tank-like in its control structure too, but it was really cool.
All right, guys, I have not looked at the votes until this moment. I'm about to click on them. But this is what the people that this has got more votes than any round of our March Madness up to this point. Thousands of votes.
Better not
see what the
Tetris.
People say. amazing. Right in for Tetris. This is I'm very surprised at this, honestly. I thought this was not going to be close. It is close. Portal, 52.7%. Super Mario 64, 47.3%.
What? Oh, yeah. Man.
Recency.
Wow. Wow.
You think it's recency?
I think that's some of it. I think some of it's recency. I think some of it is that Portal's a fantastic game. And I think some of it is apparently that a lot of our listeners are wrong.
and they've got Mario fatigue as well, probably.
Can you believe it? Shock the world out of nowhere. Cinderella story, Portal.
That's crazy. That's just crazy.
Congratulations. The test is now over.
very nice.
I need to go to Vegas and put some money on UConn quick. That's what I'm hearing here.
Guys, the cake was not actually a lie. It's congratulations to Portal. It won the people's vote, and that is very, very surprising to me. I thought Super Mario 64 was gonna crush it, honestly.
So DLC podcast says Super Mario 64 sucks.
Officially. Yes. Officially, that's our stance.
Is that the headline?
Yeah.
Okay.
Box club.
Basically, if your game's not a first-person shooter of some form, even if it's a Portal, if it's not a first-person shooter of some form, DLC hates it. Like, that's fact.
Well, congratulations to the Christian Spicer half of the bracket. It defeated the Kanata half, although I would not have chosen 64 as my representative.
We get it,
but that's
Jeff.
Okay.
Jeff, we get it. You, on your back, you have a tattoo that says, I hate Super Mario 64. We've all seen it. We know it.
It was very Tetris, painful to get. Very
Tetris faux life. I understand.
And yet they still let him into E3 every year. It's crazy.
It is crazy. I think we all can agree that Portal would have lost to Tetris. But let's move on. I think it's tabletop time.
Right now.
Tabletop time, where we talk about board games, and this week is a great week to talk about board games because it was International Tabletop Day. The awesome folks over at Geek & Sundry and Will Wheaton's Tabletop Show kind of created their own holiday a couple years ago, and a lot of people were celebrating it, including Christian and I. I invited Christian over to my place, and we played a board game with his family. It was lovely, wasn't it, Christian? Wasn't it lovely?
And it was lovely. My invite hasn't come across the border yet. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, I keep waiting for that. It was
International Tabletop Day, Jeff.
That's true. I should have sent you the plane ticket, Vic.
Next year.
Next year. You said you're not much of a board gamer yet, right?
No, I don't have time, unfortunately. We have so many video games to talk about, and we review movies and all the other stuff. I'd love to play. I don't have time, and that's not an excuse, but that's the truth.
Oh, no. Well, Christian, you know, you haven't had a lot of experience with it, but we moved into a game that I think was a bit ambitious because we both had you had your wife, I had my fiance, and you had your baby girl with us. It was real family time, but I went for it. I went for an actual Euro-style kind of complex board game because that's what I wanted to play on Tabletop Day. And we played Last Will, which is a game I've talked about on the show before. It's one of my favorites. It's basically the plot of the movie Brewster's Millions, if you remember that movie from the 80s, Richard Pryor and John Candy. Basically, the goal is to lose all your money and go bankrupt faster and more than the other people who are also trying to lose their money. So you do all these funny things to lose your money, like buy real estate and then try to depreciate it and then sell it for a loss, or go out to dinner at an extravagant restaurant and take your horse with you because that costs a lot of money. All these wacky things, but it makes a lot of sense, I think. What did you think of Last Will, Christian?
I thought it was fun. Yeah, I mean, one, I think my daughter was a trooper. We played for a while. She never even choked on a piece and died. So I consider that a big success.
There are a lot of, let's be honest, choking hazards in this game, aplenty.
Oh, yeah, a lot in board games. No, but I think it was fun. I think Amanda really enjoyed it, my wife. I think she had her, I know she talked about it throughout the weekend and how had we finished, she was poised to make a move, I think were her words. and it keeps you engaged throughout the game, which is something that I always, you know, I've talked about before on this show. I prefer a board game that doesn't end after four turns, essentially, for one or two players, where you feel like you're still, you have a chance or it's still fun for you. It's definitely a game that I would want to play more to get a handle on everything. Like, I understood the mechanics of it, but I think this game is kind of like, you know, you can have fun sitting down and playing, not Dota, but maybe like the DC style. What's the DC MOBA? Gosh, doesn't matter.
Infinite Crisis?
Yeah, whatever it's called. You could play that and have some fun with it initially, but you want to understand it's all of the moving parts. And I feel like Last Will is kind of like that, where I knew what I was supposed to be doing, but then I would do a turn. And then Jeff, you would do a turn and you were like, and 2+ orange and 4+ pink and this plus that, and this card activates this and this card. Like, you saying everything you're doing in your turn took as long as me to think of what I was going to do. And I was like, I'll buy a house. And you were like, combo. But it's fun. It's a fun game. And I would, if you haven't played it, I'd recommend playing it. I think with a group of friends, it's enjoyable. And that's really, you know, and I think you've said this before too, Jeff, what makes board games fun is that even in between turns, you can be talking about something else, right? You're playing this board game, but oftentimes board games are a reason to get together with friends and hang out. Whereas I think sometimes podcasts serve that same purpose, where people will be like, man, that was great doing your podcast. I hadn't talked to you in like 2 months. We should do this again sometime. And I think board games can serve that same role, where it's get people together and that you where you're not at a movie or you're not at a concert or at a bar, and you can actually talk and do something that's fun at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's exactly what I like about being around a table playing games with people. Last Will is a great light Euro. It's not too heavy and it's got a really fun theme, in my opinion. I wanted
like
to mention another
buttery aftertaste. It's like with compliments of cherry. If you just, it's delicious.
I wanted to mention another board game I played recently, because it's a game that I've been dying to play, because it's from my favorite designer, Uwe Rosenberg, the guy who designed Le Havre, which is my current favorite game of all time, and Agricola, and Aura et Labora, and a bunch of really great games. He created a game called Caverna, which when we had Tom Vassell on, he talked about, I believe, and it's just one of the best games of last year to a lot of people, and I've been dying to get my hands on it. It's a hard game to get a hold of at this point, but finally got a chance to play it recently, and man, does it live up to the hype. It is so fun. It plays a lot like Agricola. A lot of people are calling it Agricola 2, and it's basically Agricola with a fantasy theme. So in Agricola, you're basically building a farm, and it's really fun because you have this board that's just your board in front of you, and you build your farm on it. You build fences and you put animals, and you do. It's a really, really cool game. In Caverna, you're a cave farmer, so you're a dwarf, and you're excavating a cave in front of you, and you create rooms in that cave after you burrow through the stone walls, and make those rooms have certain functions. So you can make a cookery that makes food for you, and you can, you know, make something that will refine rubies or whatever, basically help you score points. But you can also outfit your dwarves, your dwarf farmers, with weaponry and send them on excursions to do really cool adventures. So that's a whole new aspect to this game that wasn't in Agricola, and it's really fun. You can go to a blacksmith and get weapons for your dwarf and then send him off, and basically allows you to do multiple things on a turn. So a lot of the gripes that people had with Agricola was that since it's a worker placement game and you only have so many rounds, and if I do something as a worker placement game, it prevents someone else from doing that, that a lot of people felt like it was a stressful situation and your plans were easily messed up by other people. In Caverna, that is mitigated because there's so many different ways to do certain things. If someone is monopolizing a certain aspect of the board, I can send my warrior off to do basically accomplish the same thing in one of his excursions. So, and there's also this new commodity of rubies that you get from your caves that allow you to do super special moves that basically allow you to do things that somebody else might be preventing you from doing. So it opens things up greatly. There's a whole bunch of new options. The art on the board is really cool. The pieces are really great. I mean, this is a $90 game, so it's pretty expensive, but you get a lot in that box. It's a pretty heavy game. It's not something I'd recommend for people as their first Euro game experience, but it is really one of the best games I've ever played, and I really do agree with Tom Vassell in the sense that it kind of makes Agricola obsolete. Agricola, a game I've played dozens and dozens of times, one of my favorite games. I think it does everything that game does better. So it's spectacular. If you get a chance to play Caverna, if you're a board gaming fan, I highly, highly recommend it.
Hey, Jeff, how often do you play board games, man? Like, once a week you get friends over and you do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at least. Yeah, once a week. And sometimes I try to do it more than that. But at least try once a week. And I have a group of guys. I mean, that's the hardest thing about board games, honestly, is A, making the time, and B, everybody making the time, because it's not something that's easy to do by yourself. I mean, there are games you can play by yourself, but that's not really why I like it, so I don't really do that.
Yeah. Man, yeah. It sounds awesome. You make it sound very, very enticing. I've got to look
this up. It's a blast.
Yes. I've got to make time for board games.
Yeah, well, next time you're in LA, I would love to hang out and do that. That would be fun.
Yes, you teach this noob.
Gladly. It's one of my favorite things to do. All right, guys. That'll do it for this week's episode. Really, really fun hanging out with you, Vic, as usual, and so many great insights. Thanks for spending the time with us.
Oh, it was my privilege. You guys put on a good show. This was really cool.
Thanks, man. Where can people see more of your stuff?
Well, EPN.TV, that's kind of what we wanted to do with this whole EPN thing, is just keep it simple with something that people can remember very easily. We've got podcasts. We've got live streaming interviews. This week we had Manu Bennett from, Manu Bennett from Arrow, who just made a huge impression as Deathstroke into the studio. You can watch full episodes of the shows. You can watch, you know, individual segments. You can find out about the radio stuff that we're doing. But EPN.TV, that's where people should go.
Awesome. Christian, what about you this week? What's going on?
Well, this is not this week. Well, I guess this week, Tuesday, if you're in LA, is What's New at NerdMelt. And then the podcast will be out the following Monday. It's a stand-up comedy podcast where comics you know and seen on late night and stuff like that do new material. And then we talk about what worked and what didn't. Thursday, also in LA, is improv versus stand-up. But people have said, hey, I'm not in LA. The end of this month, I believe the 24th or 26th and 27th, whatever that weekend is there, I'll be doing some guest sets at Wise Guys in Salt Lake City, which should be fun. And then next month, I will be at Lucky Comedy Club, a new cool new comedy club that just opened up in New Orleans. I'll be there for a weekend, like the 17th. I hope that's a weekend. I'll talk about it more as it gets closer, but those are some out of town dates. If you're in one of those cities, come say hi. I'd love to see you at a show. And then next week, we have a friend of mine and someone that you know too. I'm just excited. Assuming everything continues to go well, Emily Gordon's going to be on the show, who people might know from also Nerdist and Meltdown, and her video game show Indoor Kids.
Yeah. We're so really excited to have her. We're a fan of her, and it's well past time for us to have a female contributor on the show, and so we're excited to have her be our first. Very cool. I have a big announcement to make.
Yes.
A miracle happened, and I'm getting to go to PAX East. So I will be at PAX East next weekend. I will be hosting the Firaxis panel, which I'm really excited about, which if you guys are in any way fans of Firaxis games, they make the XCOM games, Civilization games, you need to come to this panel. It's going to be huge. I can't tell you what is happening, but there is going to be an awesome announcement. I am so thrilled that they asked me to do it. It's going to be awesome. Unfortunately, this all happened too late for us to put together a DLC panel, but I will be there. I'd love to see DLC fans there. I hope you guys, if you're going to PAX East, will take time to either go to that panel or find me on the show floor and say hi. I would love to see folks there. It's going to be my first time at PAX East, my first time in Boston, so I'm pretty excited about it. Also, all week long and the last few weeks, we've been doing DLC minis, so check out my YouTube channel, youtube.com. What did I say?
DLC.
Oh, NLB minis. YouTube.com/KanataJeff is where you can find that, or my website, JeffKanata.com, which is built on Squarespace. All right, guys, that does it for this episode. We appreciate you hanging out and listening. We love those iTunes reviews. If you take a second and give us a good review on iTunes, we certainly appreciate it. This week on iTunes, Kevin K. Taylor said DLC is done with love and care. And we certainly appreciate that. Until next week, we appreciate you listening. And think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.